Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 113 of the old Distraction Pieces podcast, the Times best-selling iTunes top 10 in, it wasn't top 10, it got to 12, the book, but that sounds better. Distraction Pieces podcast, thank you all for tuning in. Hugely exciting week this week. We got a two-parter, and one of the most requested guests in the history of the Distraction Pieces podcast. I'm joined this week by Limmy, who, I mean, I was insanely excited to have a chat with. I'm a massive fan of Limmy's show, so it was really exciting to get him on the podcast and have a good chat. It's always nerve-wracking when it's someone you've not met before. You never know if you're going to hit it off. You never know how the chat's going to go. You never know if they're going to hate you. But we got on really well, and it was lovely. There was a couple of points I had to remind myself that I'm a podcaster and I'm meant to be kind of getting my bits in and driving the things along. Because basically, I'm a big fan of Limmy, and there were points that he was just going off on tangents and rants, and I'm just sitting there drinking it in, enjoying it, and then suddenly go, oh shit, I'm meant to jump in at some point and engage. So any moments of silence are due to me going, oh, this is great, this is a good episode. I should mention, we are brought to you as ever by Speech Development Records. When's this one going out? This goes out on Wednesday. So Sage and Dolan have finished in the Edinburgh Fringe, absolutely smashed it, ended the week on sold-out shows. They've done Manchester, they've done Leeds. They might be in Bristol tonight, I think. Is this Wednesday? Yeah, I think they're in Bristol tonight. And then they're in London on the 1st and 2nd of September. Then they're in Brighton. Then Dolan's doing a free show in Reading, I think. So yeah, you can catch those guys. But speechdevelopmentrecords.com is now fully stacked up with all the vinyl. So I've got the Sage Francis double gold vinyl. I've got the B. Dolan Midnight Blue vinyl. I've got the King Blues Blood Red vinyl. So we're fully stacked up. I've even got Distraction Pieces on vinyl, the album, not the podcast. That would be a really long record. So yeah, support and check out at speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Obviously the book, I've mentioned it an awful lot, but man, it's been overwhelming. I'm still doing press for it. Are you guys completely shocked, everyone, with your support and getting it, making it a Times bestseller and all sorts of other just wonderful stuff? So thank you for that. What other things do I need to plug? I need to mention next week's episode. I'm joined, sorry, I'm a bit coffee still. I'm joined next week by a really amazing guest called Neil Woods. And he was an undercover cop for 14 years, deeply in the war on drugs. And he's got an amazing book out now called Good Cop, Bad War. And we had an absolutely amazing chat about, he tells so many, there's some funny stories, there's a lot of really dark and heavy stories, but yeah, it's a great episode. I recommend you check it out. If you want a bit of a teaser, I heard of Neil Woods on the Stuff and Search podcast, which is also on the Distraction Pieces network, and a few things he said on that made me go, I need to get him on for a full Distraction Pieces. So yeah, that's next week. I also need to plug my boy Jake Brett. Jake runs the Distraction Pieces social media, so the Facebook page and all that. So go and check that out. He does the YouTube as well and puts up YouTube clips of the episodes and some highlights. So check them out. But he's got his album coming out. He's got the release party on September 1st at the Watford Museum. I'm not sure if I'm meant to mention that. I don't know if it's private invitation, but yeah, if it is, I apologize. But yeah, I just wanted to let you all know about the wonderful Jake Brett. So check him out, check his music out. As said, he runs the Facebook page and all the Distraction Pieces social media, and I'm feeling his stuff. He's hustling hard on this record. I'm seeing him send it out to everyone. He's doing exactly what's right. He's got a song. If you want to just check something out on YouTube, check out, I believe it'll be going up in time, Jake Brett, a Wes Anderson's or Wes Anderson song. The album is The Bolene Modifier, so check Jake Brett out. I think that's all I need to get in this first bit. As I said, this is a two-parter, so because we ramble on for ages, but I think you're going to really enjoy it. I'll pop up at the end and let you know what the deal is. The first part will be at midnight, the second part will be at midday, as we normally do. But yeah, this is episode 113 with Limmy. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. This piece of fiction is the intro to destruction. So, I'm joined today by one of our most requested guests. I've had loads of people asking for you, and I'm a big fan as well. I'm joined by Limmy. How you doing, man?
Very, very well. I'm glad to hear it. Didn't know that. By the way, where I'm holding the mic right now, is this all right?
That's absolutely perfect. Yeah, I mean, they're kind of good. The beauty of this is I record them on two separate streams, so my guy Buddy Peace, who puts it together, can make some adjustments if you if you drift away at any point uncomfortably.
Right, so is one maybe recorded kind of up loud and one's recorded quiet?
No, they're both recorded at a same level, but then they feed out so when I send them to him, it's as two different sound waves, so he can turn one up if he wants to, and being just together already.
I see.
It means I don't have to keep an eye on levels and
hear. Brilliant.
I need to apologise at first for the swankiness of my hotel room because it feels almost flirtatious. The lushness of the hotel I'm staying.
To the folk listening, it's got a kind of canopy thing. It's not quite a four poster bed, but it's got like a if you picture a kind of mosquito net thing, but it's nothing like that. It's golden. Sort of silky material, and that could come all the way around the bed, couldn't it, if you want?
I don't know. It looks like it's only over, like, if you were to lay in the middle. It's only over your head if you lay in the middle of the bed, which I've never seen before.
If you pulled it air the front, that would just fall right air you, like a tent with it pulls
and
in.
There's, I think, 10 pillows.
Two
gold,
three.
Two blue, two brown, and four regular white pillows, which are the ones that won't be on the floor.
The whole bed's covered in these velvety pillars.
Yeah.
And there's a fucking, what's that, big chest?
It's a chest. I've not even opened that.
A giant chest, about the height of the bed. The bed's got a kind of, it's got the mattress, obviously, and the thing, well, the bed. And this, there's a chest right at the front with a fucking, a body in it or something.
It reminds me of a rope. An old weathered chest.
Rope, you seen Rope, Alfred Hitchcock?
Yeah.
Reminds me of that. But you've maybe, you've murdered somebody here in Glasgow just to see if you can get away with it, just for the thrill.
Exactly. I'm on the road. Who would ever suspect?
Can it be him? He wasn't here.
I'm on a book tour. I mean, come on, who murders someone on a book tour?
Aye.
But as we were discussing on the way up, I've had a bit of this on the book tour because it's the first time I've had a tour that the hotels are booked by a publisher and paid for by a publisher rather than me. So it's that weird moment of feeling like you're rich or you're classy. When you're not really,
it's a good feeling. Like I was saying to you just before we started recording.
That's it. We were sat here just having a good old chat, and I had to kind of go, "Oh, hang on, we should probably record all of this."
I had for Daffy Stories, my book last year.
Yeah,
well, it's out in paperback now in all good bookshops.
I have to say, I've tweeted and Instagrammed about it numerous times. It's a great book. I think there was one where I Instagrammed a whole story because the whole story was like three or four lines. And I was like, I'm seeing that as a teaser.
Right, well, you know, what story was it?
I can't even think which one. It was just one small bit. Or it might have just been an opening line that I was reading on the train, not in first class. It was before I was a published author. And I literally just laughed out loud and was like, I've got a... I then was that idiot on the train taking a photo of a book on my lap. And
you've got to watch
so
it with that, because if you take a picture, if you've got your sound up on your phone, you know the way that it does the camera sound, then... And like the person at your side and the person in front of you, the person behind you, they'll be thinking they're taking a photo of me. That's what I would think.
Yeah,
I go, they're taking a photo of my legs.
Gotta be.
That's how I heard that. They're taking a picture of my legs. Picture.
But yes, so when you were doing,
I was doing that last year.
Daffy Stories.
It was in like Glasgow, Aberdeen, Newcastle, Manchester, London, and the publishers, they booked all the tickets for all the trains and the hotels and all that.
Yeah.
And they said, go to the station, put in this code and you'll get the thing out the machine, the tickets. Great, and I was just expecting it to be just you sit on a train and that's your normal train.
It's how trains work. We're all familiar with train journeys, so right?
You've been on a train. Now, imagine you're on a train, but I looked at the ticket and it said first class. I'm like, yes. And I think I got an agent, right? And the agent said, oh, well, we did a deal and they'll pay for the travel and the, what do you call it? Accommodation.
Accommodation.
I was like, yes, man. Yes. That's fucking class. And it's kind of like for free, sort of, maybe. Nothing's for free.
I completely feel it exactly the same way. As we've said, it will come out of some money somewhere, but that's not money I've ever seen in my life. So it's free.
Excellent. And I got, because I've never been in first class, like actually paid for first class.
Yeah.
And I was on the train, I was getting the train up to Aberdeen and you're getting fucking food. You're getting food and then they come here a wee bit later and say, would you like a roll or something, or like a free fucking drink? I'm like fucking royalty, man. I'm not like that lot and these other fucking carriages. I'm not like them anymore. I was, before I got on the train, I was just a normal pro. And now I'm like a fucking eating fucking Tory here.
Yeah,
it
changes you.
Oh, it's excellent. And then staying in the hotel, getting up, getting breakfast in the hotel, even that feels like a nice wee luxury, getting a cereal and going, I'm going to get that cereal that mixes that cereal with that cereal. You know, it's a mix. I've never had that before. Getting on a train for Aberdeen to Newcastle, first class again, and you get a breakfast in the morning, and then you get fucking lunch, and you get stuff in between, and you're like, this is a fucking life. It's one of my favourite times of my life. I remember, see, just on the trains, not even, I really enjoyed the shows and everything.
Yeah.
But just
the travelling.
Aye, sitting by myself, looking at a window, at the world going by, and I'm like, this is, normally if you're having a really good time in your life, it's, well, for me anyway, you're looking back at it, you're kind of, like I might look back at it, I used to look back at it when I was maybe about 16 and going to Millport, this place I used to go to, a kind of holiday place. And I would look back at that in my 20s and go, they were cracking days, or when I was 8. They were cracking days. They were simpler days. Forgetting that I was probably bored half the time or feeling lonely or trying to get miserable. A girlfriend or something. Aye. All that. You strip all that away and you're just left with the good wee things. But while that was happening, I was like, I'm enjoying this as it's fucking happening.
It's right in the moment. You're taking it in.
This is fucking, look at that. When's this going to happen again? Might happen next year.
I'm driving myself on this one, but I arrived at Manchester and the lad opens the door and he's like, I'll get a trolley. I'll take your bags up to your room. And I was like, all right. Again, I like this. But it stunned me how changed I was the next morning, because I got up and picked up my bags to go downstairs and then went, I ain't carrying this.
Aye.
I'm going to ring down and get... So I rang down and said, can someone bring a trolley up and carry my goddamn bag?
I don't fucking come for money or anything like that.
So,
I come for a council estate, kind of wanting class and all the rest of it. And I'm not used to fucking... Even now that I'm kind of doing all right for myself, I had the telly thing and I go at the book thing and hope that fucking keeps going, but...
Yeah.
I could afford it. I could afford a first class ticket, but I'm not going to fucking pay for that. Fuck that. What for? Just instead of sitting in kind of four people, you're sitting kind of by yourself and you get a fucking roll and bacon.
Yeah.
And it costs you twice as much.
I mean, it does make me think of, I always use iPhone apps as an example, because the fact is, you've just listed that was possibly the happiest you've ever been in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You still look at the expense and go, I ain't paying that. I ain't paying to be the happiest I've ever been in my life. But it's the same with apps on Android or an iPhone. The fact that if they're free, you're like, great, I'll have that.
Aye.
If they're like 49p, you're like, fuck off. I mean, I'll get hours of enjoyment out of that, but fuck.
Yep.
You could drop a 50 pence piece and you wouldn't even know.
Exactly.
But 49p, fuck off.
It's just because that's where you're used to. I started buying apps because of my son. You get these like wee games, and then you get to a certain point and it says to get another three levels of the rest of the game, pay the money. Oh, I want that. I want that. And you're going, oh, fuck it. And it's only like either 69 pence sometimes it's like fucking £4. And you're like, well, £4, I mean, what is that? That's like, and you kind of add it up. But I don't really pay for that for myself. But you get used to it. You get fucking used to it, because I got the train for Aberdeen down to Newcastle, right? First class again.
Yep.
And then, what was it? Newcastle the next day. I had it in my head, the train, I was to get the train at 20 to 12. That's right. When the train in Manchester was.
Yeah.
20. The number 11, because it's like 11:40, but I had 20 in my head, 20. And I thought that meant, I think 20, because, not because it's 20 past 11, but it's 20 to 12.
Yeah.
But no, it was 20 past 11. So I went to this wee museum fucking thing in Newcastle, go back to the station in time for my train that was, well, is there, no, I fucking missed it.
God damn it.
And I went to the person and I said, I've got this ticket here. I mean, can I get this? When's the next train? Can I get this for free, you know, because it's paid for? No, you can't get that because of something. I'm like, what's off to buy a new ticket? Yeah, all right. And, you know, I'm not going to fucking pay first class with that. No. But, so I paid standard class, right? Or whatever you call it. Normal fucking train.
Regular.
Aye. And I was standing at the station and the train came in and we're all sort of waiting there to get on the train, but they were kind of cleaning the train. And I was waiting with this woman, this Newcastle woman there, who, there was this other woman that came up with Wayne's, right? And she was a bit posh. She kind of looked like a black-haired, bowl-cutted. Remember the way Anne Widdecombe used to look before she got her hair dyed blonde? Yeah. That kind of way. And she was sort of short. And she had all these wee lassies that were maybe in like primary seven or younger. They all kind of looked like her. And they all had these quilted jackets on. They looked like they would go shooting grouse.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
They're like, come along now. Speak like that. No, like a Newcastle accent or anything like that. And they kind of went ahead and they were sort of pressing the button to see if the train door would open. And the woman who was next to me, and she, I kind of did a Newcastle accent. Can I do the Newcastle accent? Like, nice, what is that? But she spoke like the pure Newcastle accent, and she was looking at me as if, what do they like her? You know, like it was a class thing. It was like, I think she heard my accent, my dialect, and going, right, he's one of me.
He's one of us.
And then you got these posh ones coming up. And so she kept looking at me all the time whenever that they went up. And she said to us, I'll tell you, you know, if they try and go up there again, because they sort of walked away a wee bit, if they try and go up and press that button and get in before me, you know, I'm just going to say, manners, because what are they like? What are they like? Like that. And I was like, I know. And I was thinking, you think I'm like you? Right, and I was a couple of days ago before I got in these first class fucking trains. But I shouldn't even be on this with you. I'm actually male at her now.
I'm like, she's my pimple.
In fact,
now.
I'm better than her. Because what's she doing getting on a fucking standard class? You know, she's like a kind of posh and got a bit of money.
Yeah.
I'm not like any of yous. I'm meant to be on the fucking first class. I'm not meant to be on this smelly fucking pro train. I'm up there now. With
downgraded
the,
so quickly.
You know, the pigs away. In the fucking animal farm. I'm turned into a human. Yeah. And you get on the fucking train and the cushion on the train's pure thin. It's a pure hard back. It was even like normal trains up the road.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck this. And when we got on the train, the posh woman was talking to her wains and she was talking on the phone dead loud, going, yes, well, we'll be there about, let me see, we'll be there. And then that other woman, working class woman, sort of looked to me across the aisle as if, God, what's she like? And I was like, I'm fucking not meant to be here. Can I just ask you to stop looking at me?
Don't bring me into this.
You've got the wrong idea about me. I was travelling first class yesterday and the day. We were never supposed to meet.
Did you have your missed first class ticket on you still so you could
I fucking should have.
Could have whipped that out and kind of gone, look.
I should have went, listen, I don't know how to put it onto words. A picture.
Or just tapped it. Just held it up and tapped it.
A picture tells a thousand words. I should have just went like that. Listen, I think that explains. I should have just said to her, listen, I don't want to go on about it. I don't want to seem like some kind of snob because honestly, I'm I swear to God, only a few days ago, I really was just like you, but I wasn't supposed to be on this train, you see. I was supposed to be on a first class carriage because I'm like a pure fucking big shot now.
Yeah.
I've got a book out right now. I'm actually an author.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what you do. I don't know what she does. Aye, but I'm actually
not self-published. Aye. Not a vanity published. I'm published. Someone else has chosen to publish me.
I've actually got like a book cover and it's like a hardback. You can actually pick up. You'd actually find a book in the shelves. And don't fucking judge me until you've tried it. But no, I didn't say that. I just went like,
just
you know what I actually did? I did the kind of, you know, the. When you do that thing with your horn,
as if you've not got a puppet, as if you had a puppet on your hand.
Aye,
but you haven't.
Know, I kind of like God, what's she like? And I'm doing kind of yap thing with my horns. Yep. And I think when I left, I did say see you later to her, as if, you know, good luck with her.
Yeah,
and otherwise, it's me and you.
Yeah,
me and you against the East fucking middle class fucking or that fucking mob. But once I got to Manchester, and it was Manchester to London. Back in
the right class.
Back in,
oh, it's good. Back where you belong.
It was good, but
I mean,
I've not been in the first class since.
I swear, the first class is paying to either be on your own or to be around other people who wouldn't have the audacity to talk to a stranger.
Aye.
Like when you're at that class, you just.
You don't like.
I'm not looking to converse.
Like here in Glasgow, there's an area called Partick. I used to stay in. A few years ago, Gardner Street. It's this really kind of steep hill.
Yeah.
Really, really steep hill in Glasgow. Down the bottom, it's like, you would call it kind of Partick Hill. It's, Partick is down the hill and it's sort of working class. Lots of students and all that and everything. But kind of working class, pub.
Yeah. Pub.
And then, but just up the street is Hindland, if you go up the hill. And that's like sort of middle class. And it's funny, you go down the hill, people have got dogs. You go up the hill, people have got cats. And it's sort of middle class up there. And if you keep going a wee bit further, that's where all your... Anybody that's got money in
Glasgow...
Hairless
cats.
What?
Hairless cats.
Or like...
That's what's above cats.
Hairless cats, well, like the cats Sphinx. And
then, yeah, they're the really expensive.
Aye. Like up there in Hindland, that's like, if you know anybody that stays in Glasgow, that's some kind of celeb on the telly and they've probably got a lot of money, they stay up that way, Hindland. And down the hill, it's just kind of working class. And you would notice it, when you go down the hill towards Partick, people fucking talk to you.
Yeah.
People have a wee word with you, they say they're chatty. You go up the hill and people are a bit more fucking ignorant. I'm generalising though, everybody. Yeah. But there is a kind of... See, I'm probably talking shite here, because actually when you go up to Hindland, I'm about to say, oh, they don't hold the doors open for you. If you hold the door open for somebody there, they don't say thanks. I don't actually think that's ever happened. But let's just say it for the sake of...
Imagine it should.
Aye, let's just imagine this thing. This isn't true. What I'm about to say is a lie. But see, when you go up there at Hindland and open the door for somebody, they don't... Whereas down there, like, see if you're kind of cycling and you're walking and you sort of nearly bump into somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, pal. Sorry, mate. You know, they kind of say that. See, up the hill, it's just sort of looks. You get, I'm making it sound as if you get dirty looks and everybody's pure snobby. But you get that. And we were looking after my girlfriend's brother, Staffy, at the time. Go down the hill, everybody's sort of leaning out. Oh, getting a wee clap and everything. You go up the hill and they're pulling a fucking wains away for it and they've got this look in their face. So it's kind of like, maybe when you go into this middle class sort of way, you get people that don't want to know. They've worked their way up and they don't want to know you. Or maybe they reach that point by being kind of psychopathic and don't actually like people. I'm all right with fucking people there and walking air people. And that's how I got my fucking five-story fucking tin house.
That's how they become. They're all business.
Aye.
They're too busy for idle chit-chat.
Yeah.
So let's rewind to before you were.
Big segment about trains there, wasn't it?
I mean, yeah, it was. It was beautiful. But, you know, now you're a published author. You're at the top of that hill. So, you know, let's rewind to when you weren't at the top of that hill.
Yeah.
How did you kind of start everything out? Because I found you initially on YouTube, and then I found that you could order the Limmy Show or Limmy Show, sorry, I like to get things right, not the Limmy Show, Limmy Show.
I kind of dig people up for that now and again. I see it in papers and...
I'm glad I corrected it immediately.
It's like, they say it's like Limmy Show, but people say the Limmy Show,
yeah.
And they also say like my surname Limond with two M's instead of one. Obviously, a lot of your listeners will be, I don't give a fuck what you're, how many M's you've got in your fucking surname, cunt. You yapping on about fucking trains, fucking shite like that. Fuck off. But it's just funny when you see it, like the Limmy Show or the Limmy. Like, how hard is it to get a name of a programme right? I sound like a pure money bastard.
It's,
like,
it's simple things.
It's just a thing like how. I don't think I would make that mistake. You know, if I worked in a job where you're typing something and you have to get it kind of.
Yeah. Right? It's getting it right, isn't it? It's as simple as I always have people put an extra O in Scroobius. Or, there was an article in the Guardian Guide, I think it was. I've still not seen it yet, about the book. And my brother messaged me to say it was a good article. They were positive. They were nice. But the journalist was obsessed with the fact that my name is David Meads.
Right.
And it was just everything. Scroobius Pip, a.k.a. David Meads. And then just, they literally wrote the words David Meads about 10 times in this article.
Aye.
It's like, is that the prevalent part of information that we need to put across right now? Is that,
it's got a way,
really
it's
important?
It's almost like that person, I don't know that person's motives for doing that, but it's kind of like they're dangling away. It's like a chess move, or like a move in drafts or something, you know, like in drafts. It's like they're sort of leading you into a trap say, why did they keep saying my name? Oh, have you got a problem, mate? Yeah, have you got a problem,
exactly
mate? It's like, you know, like in drafts, I don't know the rules you play, like with drafts or checkers, as Americans call it. When you put your piece in front of theirs, they have to take it. They have to jump at it and take it away. You kind of just decide not to. You've got to take it. It's kind of like they're doing that. I'm going to put that there, and I know that you're going to go.
Yeah,
you're going
to
say that, and I can go
next.
Oh, I'm sorry, you wee bit sensitive. No, I touched a nerve. You.
That's it. She's got me. Whoever it was has got me. But so I first got into via YouTube. But as soon as I started to tweet or talk anywhere about a Limmy and Limmy's show, there was a swarm of people who were like, back in the day, the blog, the podcast, and all of that. So how did it all start out for you? What was your kind of approach into comedy?
It was all kind of accidental in a way. How did I fucking start out? Like, I went to college, uni, all this shit. Sat in my ass for about a year after leaving uni. And then, this is going to sound like a big fucking biography I've just got off the tongue. I just kind of keep reading off a fucking script in my head. But after about a year of doing fuck all, just kind of getting like fucking housing benefit and just fucking signing on fucking skint, I went to the job centre, and then I was about to get a job in Lidl. I hadn't applied for it, but there was a thing in the paper saying £5 an hour. I think it was like stacking shelves just round the corner, and £5 an hour when you're fucking signing on.
Yeah.
I was like, that, you know, that's a fucking lot of money. I'd be able to get a good wee bit of fucking money. And I went to the job centre, and I was like, thinking either doing that, but then I went to the job centre and they had a thing saying, New Deal course, learn how to make websites. And I says, is that available now? You get an extra fiver or tenner on top of your gyro every week.
Mm.
Or Fortnite or whatever it was. So I did that, and it's like one of these things, they just teach you how to do websites, and then that's when I discovered Flash.
Yeah.
That was like 1997 or 1998, I think. And I was looking at it, I was like, look at that. You know, they didn't teach it, but I was like, look at that, I'd love to know how to make that. And they said, if you do the placement, if you do really well and you show potential, a lot of people are just there just to kind of, fuck it, get an extra bit of money.
Yeah, it's another thing to turn up to
get a bit of money. Other people, no, they really wanted to get into it. So I was really interested in it, and interested in Photoshop and fucking, you know, get all the software up the Barras. The Barras is this kind of marketplace in Glasgow that you can buy lots of, back then you can get lots of pirate stuff. Yeah. There's people selling the pirate stuff. So you get all the fucking Photoshop and everything. So learning all that, and then I got a placement in this web company. Then making websites, and I learned Flash in there. And then Flash is like, I don't know if people still fucking remember it now, because it's dead.
It just,
because that fucking app, that fucking Steve Jobs up there, upstairs now,
it ruined it all.
I killed it. But
loads of websites originally. Like I remember when a flash our websites first came about, and they were like the most exciting thing because they were this whole, they could do everything, it was all moving, but then it kind of died off because you couldn't really interact that much with
People flash, were making up experimental menus and what kind of interesting menu system can we do, and half the time people would go into a site and go, how the fuck, you know, 3D menu, it's spinning a bit. You got to click and drag it around just to click on fucking contact, and then it's a form that doesn't quite send properly. But I learned how to do flash stuff in there, and then you're doing stuff for clients, you're doing stuff like boring stuff or exciting stuff, but then I decided I want to make up my own stuff. I've got some ideas of my own, and I want to, like a wee funny thing or a dirty thing or something like that. And so I made the website Limmy.com. My nickname's Limmy, and Limmy.com, where I put my own wee flash playthings on.
Yeah.
And then about 2000, and that got kind of popular, relatively speaking. And, you know, there's like forums and things like that, and you post your stuff.
It was all kind of pre-social media as well.
It was before YouTube.
Was it? Because, again, from people I've talked to since, they'd talk about how it would be on forums, or they'd get stuff emailed to them as a newsletter type things and all that. So
there'd be all the kind of design forums and things like that, and people would be all kind of bitchy and critical, and you would make something, or somebody would make something, or you would post your company's, like some website you've made, and people would go, it's a bit this, it's a bit that, reminds me of something, took too long to load. This is like modem days and things it took too long. I just got a wee bit bored, waiting and switched it off. You know, so it's just kind of like on nasty stuff like that here and there. But I made up my own stuff. Then about 2002, I got a video camera and I started putting me videos on my site.
Yeah.
And like wee sketches, like one of them's like the birthday card is like, I think, the first one I put up on my thing. So I made a wee video for like Chunk. I had a web company called Chunk. That's still gone.
Yeah.
I left, but that's still gone. And made up wee videos for that, like Guy Fawkes, to promote Chunk. It's like this Guy Fawkes, if you look up Chunk Guy Fawkes, it's like me like smoking a banger. You know, like fucking thing, it blows up in your face. But I made videos. I started sticking videos on my site. I wouldn't have called them sketches back then, just videos. You're making up daft wee fucking videos. And then I did some more. Eventually, about 2006, me and my girlfriend decided to go, 2005, me and my girlfriend decided to go travelling. And before we went, I put all the videos together and put it on a DVD and sold about 100 through my site. And I had a blog at the time and everything, and a forum, I think it was. And then that one of the DVDs found its way to the comedy unit. That comedy unit here made like Rab C. Nesbitt and all these other, like Chewing the Fat, these well-known comedies up here, Still Game, all that. And they said, like, who are you and what do you want today? Are you interested? And that was when I was in Australia at the time.
Yeah.
Got an email saying, I'm like, look at this. I was like, look at this. And it says, well, I'm in Australia just now. My girlfriend was ready to go, you know, 6 months until we got back.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend was like, do you think we should just head back now? And I'm like, no, just kind of leave it. No, like,
it's a big email to get out of nowhere as well. If it's not something you've actively chased, you know, you just go.
I says, I'm in Australia just now. I'll be back in a few months. Because I didn't want to treat them mean, keep them keen, that kind of thing. But just like, I'm not going to go fucking running back, cancel the whole fucking thing. And he said, no, that's fine. And then when I got back, I met up with him, and they're saying, so what does he want to do? Do you want to write for other people's stuff, or being somebody else's stuff, or what? And I was saying, well, I'd like my own sketch show. I was thinking of that maybe. And then they were wanting to talk about it, and I says, well, first I've got an idea. There's an idea I've been thinking about while I've been away travelling, and it's a podcast. And I had all these character ideas, Jacqueline McCafferty and Dee Dee, and all the wee ideas for what each of them would, like, ideas for these episodes, audio sketches. And I made that up about 2006. That was 10 years ago, around about this time, 10 years ago. And I just thought, right, I'm going to do a 12-week podcast every day, 9 characters, an episode every single day for 12 weeks solid, and I make up a nice wee logo for it, Limmy's World of Glasgow, and I make up a wee logo. It looks like a tenement building and the kind of style of signs that you get in Glasgow. And I'll get a good mic for it, and I'll make a right big deal about it and try and, like get an iTunes sort of chart or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what happened. I did that, and they featured it, and there'd be kind of iTunes middle featured bit, like bits. And I got into the iTunes top 10. Like, it was like next to like Channel 4 things and BBC things. Yeah. That was like the only one that was like making something up themselves, and then the papers.
Yeah.
Well, I got, oh, look at this guy. He's made a podcast in his house. And then that led to somebody offering me about a stand-up. They said, would you be interested in doing a stand-up show for the Glasgow Comedy Festival, March 2007. Sorry, I'm fucking going on a bit, but I suppose this is the purpose of this.
Yeah, that's the purpose. That's why these things are long.
And I said, no, I don't do that. I've never done that. I don't even get up at a karaoke or anything like that. No. And my girlfriend went, no, just say aye, just do it, it'll be good. People who like your stuff, they'll come along and you'll do your characters for World of Glasgow or something. Aye, all right. And then I got into stand-up. First time I did it, I was fucking shiting myself. But then when it came to my actual full live show, felt really good, and it went well. And then I did the Fringe that year. Next year I did another Fringe show.
Yeah.
And then by the time I did that Fringe show, BBC, the comedy unit were speaking to BBC Scotland, showing them my stuff. They showed them a video of me at the Glasgow Comedy Festival in 2008. And said, look, see, people are kind of turning up and paying money to get tickets, and he's making up the videos himself, because I would show videos, they stand up, stand up. And so they gave us a pilot, and then that was that. Got a pilot, they let me direct it myself. So I said, I want to direct it, and they let me direct the whole fucking, see, the whole lot.
Yeah.
Which is risky. You know, I wouldn't have done it
Hugely. I mean, that's the thing that was, that worked.
Sorry, let me take a fucking breath here. Jesus.
I mean, that's the thing that came across and worked about it, was it felt exactly as you've said there, that it was someone that was just making a load of stuff, essentially for themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a tweet or something you did at one point that I really are related to, and I think one of the... I'd got into your stuff, and I started to get really into it when I have insomnia quite a bit. And it's kind of how I got to know Gail Porter on Twitter, because the different people who have insomnia or have different kind of issues that keep them awake, I'd see you on Twitter at night a lot, and that was always good to have someone entertaining. And you did a tweet or something once saying that there's nothing, and it comes back to exactly what you were saying about how you spent a year just kind of sitting around doing nothing. But there's few things, and I feel the same, more motivating than boredom.
Yeah,
and then having nothing to do. Yeah. And it kind of felt that, I kind of got that from a Limmy show. I felt it was someone who was bored, had nothing to do, and someone who maybe had hunted around and couldn't find the TV show they wanted to watch, so decided to make the TV show that they wanted to watch and kind of create that that art.
I mean, that kind of, that in a way sounds as if, I remember like, that kind of sounds like, yes, I got bored and I decided that I want to be in the television, and that's how I did it. I remember like fucking, was it Nick Rhodes for Duran Duran?
Right.
Said, we just decided that we wanted to have a band, so we just, we didn't know any instruments, we just learned them.
That's kind of the beauty of it, that you made these things.
Some kind of cavalier genius, or you just, I want to be in a band, we'll just pick up an instrument.
That's what I like about it, and what you've said there is you just started making stuff, and it's not even as if you took it to the BBC or anything else. It's just you made it for your entertainment and for theoretically or in your mind maybe the small audience of people that might get it or might enjoy it, and then that happened to grow and grow and grow kind of naturally.
I mean, when I was traveling, that was like between 2005, 2006, kind of run the world type of thing, and when I went away, I'd left my web company, because me and this guy, Donnie, we started up a web company called Chunk, and then I thought, right, I think that's it. I stopped drinking in 2004, and my girlfriend had wanted to go travelling. She's, why don't we go just... I'm like, I can't go. When I was drinking, I wasn't steaming saying this, but just an attitude about me, just kind of, oh, it's not going to work out. I mean, how am I going to be able to leave my company? How am I going to be able to do that? We've worked hard. You can't, Lynn, I can't just leave. I can't just do that. And,
yeah.
You know, like a defeatist and a kind of wee half bottle of wine and I.
It's reasons not to before you've actually looked into it. There's an actual reason sort of, not to. It's just, well, I just can't.
I need kind of oomph, this sort of fucking risk taking, just
yeah,
just kind of sitting and having a drink every night, just, oh, no, it won't work out, it won't work out. No, no, just, I'd like to go travelling. Look, Lynn, I would like to go travelling, but I can't. And then when I stopped drinking, I had this invincible feeling that I can do fucking anything, because I was never a kind of vody and like whiskey in the fucking morning, okay. Just a kind of, I really like it so much, I'll fucking chuck everything away for it. I love it. Still do love it, even though I don't drink.
Yeah.
And but so when I gave it up, I thought, look at that, I could fucking stop that. I can then. And what you're saying about boredom, the fucking boredom you get when you, if you like a drink and then you don't drink,
yeah,
it's fucking unbelievable. Like, I'm prone to boredom anyway, but when I can't, that's maybe part of the reason why I was drinking, just fucking boredom as well. You go out on a Saturday night and you're like, this is kind of boring unless I get fucking steaming.
And it's kind of twofold, because I have a lot of people at the moment like asking like how I do so many different things. And part of that is like, well, it's because I don't particularly drink anymore and mm-hmm. I don't, but so if you were a big drinker and you love that and suddenly you're not, not only are you missing it, but suddenly there's a lot more hours in every day, because you're not having as long to feel better in the morning, which could be, this is amazing, I've got so much time to do stuff, or it could be, if you've not got anything to fill that time, huge boredom and kind
of I would just sit, drag. A bottle of wine, I wouldn't even like have like two bottles of wine, I'd have like a bottle of wine, or half a bottle even, but I'd be sitting there playing like Grand Theft Auto 3, which is all right, and everything. Yeah. I still play fucking games, everything. But maybe play a kind of night after night. No, I would watch. I mentioned Rope, Ralph.
Yeah,
it's called Rope, and I used to watch that a lot. I used to watch it, the whole thing, and just sit in bed with the telly on a kind of DVD, and just watch that, and just a glass of wine in bed, watching it at night, and then like maybe a few nights later, I just kind of date again.
Yeah,
and a few nights later, I'd sort of date again, and. Once I stopped drinking, I like the film and everything, but I'm not interested in watching it again.
Over and over again.
It kind of slows your mind down. You're kind of more relaxed a bit, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, seeing the same thing again. I'm not really doing much. And then suddenly I'm fidgety and I'm like doing tons of fucking washing tons of clays. See that fucking bin full of clays, that washing basket full of clays? I'm going through the lot of that, getting all the darks washed, all the whites washed, or the reds washed. Let's get through the lot. Because they're just sitting there doing nothing. Need to get that fucking cleaned.
And my house is always at its tidiest when I've got projects I should be doing, and I'm just like, right, I'm just going to fill this. I'm going to tidy everything. Between the
tiles.
Yeah. I'm going to get this sorted.
Get the fingernail. Like, just, the whole lot of it. Boredom. Boredom. That's what kind of leads to me, like, you know, all my stuff in SoundCloud.
I was going to say, do you feel, as you said, you're prone to boredom, and again, that sounds like a small thing, but that can be a huge thing. That can really be a crippling thing, because it's in those times that you overanalyze. There's a lot of ups and downs of social media, but do you think the dawn of social media has kind of helped you in that way? Because again, Vine was another one. The year I was at the Fringe in 2013, me and my mate Tom, most evenings would get in and go, right, we'll catch up on Limmy's Vines, and there would be like hours of just mayhem, just as rich again. It's kind of, there's some a creativity and gives you almost some function and purpose if you are in those periods of boredom or space.
It was great. That was a cracking, I think that was the golden summer of Vine for me, because Vine had just sort of came out and I had a phone that was a bit shite, and then I suddenly got a phone that could get Vine. I actually bought a fucking phone just for it. I mean, it was, that sounds like an extravagance, but my phone was shite. You know, I'd wait
until it was time to upgrade.
I thought, right, fuck it, this is it then. In fact, it wasn't even an Android phone I think I had before. I thought, right, this is it. Or was it? I can't remember, but it couldn't run fucking Vine anyway. Yeah. That's how shite it was. So I got a phone, I think, and I had just started vine. I was on antidepressants at the time, and like I was getting kind of anxiety, depression before, ready for fucking top myself. And then I went on these antidepressants, and people say, what were you on? Citalopram. Does that no kind of hamper your creativity because you're kind of all happy? I mean, do you not need that pain or something like that?
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, that sort of pain, even like pain in the form of boredom or the form of kind of, oh, I need to do something. If you're kind of happy, and does that not demotivate you because you've got everything that a person could want in life? But that was just, that was the whole period that I made up vine after vine after vine after vine after vine. Just because maybe because I wasn't thinking, what should I do with this one? That's not quite good enough. I might change it. Just having a laugh.
Yeah,
just having a good time.
Just messing about.
So just, I think boredom and also really enjoying what I'm doing. And this isn't really a day with vine, but just thinking back to the days before I got that job back after when I got my placement, you know, the New Deal course and everything. That feeling that, and I used to talk about this on Twitter a lot, but I know what that feeling is to go like that. I can do something. I just don't know what the fuck it is. You feel kind of clever. You feel like you've got a brain and you've got thoughts that you can using it, and if you've got nowhere to put it, I was turning into DD. DD's based on me. I was never smoking dope, I never liked dope, but that way his brain is turning to fucking mud.
Yeah.
Watching adverts at 4 o'clock in the morning and picking
up. But allowing him that clarity to pick up.
A tiny wee, spotting that tiny wee detail and then telling his mates about, well, he didn't do that, he never had any mates, but I would like tell my pals about this wee thing I spotted in the background of this advert that you only see at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. They've got jobs, they've got jobs and earn money. And I'm meeting them at the fucking weekend and I'm going like that. Did you see that? And you seen that advert? It's the one for the 12 CD collection of power ballads that you get. And one of the adverts, it's got a list of all the songs that come up and they're on white. But when they play the video for that song, that the name of that song comes up in yellow. And that's what happened. Like, that DD sketch is a DD sketch. Yeah. That's based on a true fucking story. I don't know if it's exactly Belinda Carlisle's Circle in the Sand.
Yeah.
But I did notice that once. I did notice, like, it would play, like, Belinda Carlisle's Circle in the Sand in the background whilst it's got the names of these songs that come up in white. Then up comes Belinda Carlisle, Circle in the Sand, in yellow. All right. So that's to say, see that one you can see right now and you can hear? That's this one. It's in yellow. Then it happened with another one. And then another one came up that was in yellow. That wasn't the one that was getting played. And I was like, look, they've made a cunt of it. They fucked her up. And I might have fucking told my pals that. You know, you're just sitting about, you yap about things like, how are you, I'm up to this.
And then maybe, my updates on the
10 minutes in, you're like, that's it, that was the fucking big event.
It's reminded me now that the first thing I ever saw of you was a similar thing of you re-watching the news reporter with a pen that makes it magically disappear. Yeah. And again, it's exactly that. It's finding something that people shouldn't have noticed. People wouldn't have noticed.
I like things like that.
But the thing that I loved was it was making it, I was as excited as you were. And obviously you're playing a character in a way and getting overexcited, but I was genuinely getting that excited because it had been highlighted in such a way that you're like, and well, what is he doing?
Thing is, it was an actual, I don't know if any listeners have seen the thing, but what it is, it's something I did in my live show in 2007, where I would show the video. That thing that I did in that video is a kind of YouTube-y version of what I did in my live show. Yeah. I'd actually play it on the big screen, projector screen. Yeah. And say to people, look at this. But as a newsreader, BBC Scotland, he's just kind of yapping up, he's just talking away. Like, it's kind of handing over for, I think his name's David Robertson. He was sort of getting a handover for Jackie Bird. Jackie Bird was on location at somewhere. Thank you, Jackie. And then he goes and talks about something, and he just sort of flicks his horn out gently. And this pen appears for nowhere. He's got apparently no pen in his horn. And then he just moves his horn out, and he's got his fucking pen. And it didn't look like it was between his fingers. And I'm like, what the fuck? It just looks like a straightforward magic trick. But I'm like, But it can be. I mean, he wouldn't just do a magic trick in the middle of the fucking news, because somebody might say, David, what you doing magic tricks on the show? Like, about 10 minutes before, you did a news story about, like, five people have been killed and a fucking roof collapsed or something, and now you're doing magic tricks with pens. What the fuck's the score?
It's not
so acceptable. I thought, it can't be, but it turned out it was. It was in the papers. It popped up in the Sunday Mail, because I'd put the video on YouTube, and then it popped up in the Sunday Mail, which is the paper up here, and they said, Lemmy spots David Robertson magic trick, and they did a wee interview with him. No big fucking feature, but, you know, it's like bottom half of a fucking page. And me spotting, and it shows you a wee picture of it. And the interviewed him said, oh, aye, it is. It's a wee trick. I sometimes do that my granda taught me. It wasn't like an actual trick. It wasn't just sort of a wee kind of eye, like,
surprise.
It wasn't something like, no, he just... The way the camera angle was, he was just normally just moving his horn, and the pen appeared to look like it came from anywhere, like a trick.
It was a predetermined...
It's an actual trick that takes skill that he deliberately fucking does.
Imagine how pleased he must have been to have had it finally noticed and finally credited and highlighted.
But no long after.
But I guarantee he was doing exactly as you were doing. He was going and catching up with his mates, and they're like, oh, what have you been... And he's like,
did you see...
The other day, just see the pen. They all haven't, because they don't watch. They're his mates, but they don't need to watch every episode of the news.
Or maybe they've got they were doing a wee kind of gamble with it. They had a wee kind of, like, that's 122 days I've been doing it. Fucking still no caught. Yeah, yeah. 123 days and still no caught. And then I come along and I catch him. But see, no long after that interview, he'd been doing the news for years. No long after that, he wasn't doing the news anymore. Like, I didn't say, like, if he'd been sacked or decided to move on, but
go into magic full
time. He just suddenly stopped doing the news, and I'm like, is that because of me?
Is it related in some way?
I thought, well, he's been doing that for years. Then he's in the paper, this trick. Here's what I think. I don't know if this is what's happened, right? I'm just imagining it. But I can imagine somebody's went like that, oh, look at that, that's really funny. And then there's a meeting about 2 weeks later, and then... Like, maybe he says something to somebody, like, digs somebody up for something or makes a remark, and they say something that's been kind of building up in them. Well, at least I'm not doing fucking magic tricks live on air when you're supposed to be reporting. What's that? What did you say? What is it? What's going on here? A big kind of argument. Well, he shouldn't be doing that. Big argument. Or maybe somebody's hid it in for them. Hid it in for him for years.
Been waiting for that.
Waiting for something like that, and they go like that. You know, I think this is actually really, actually, you know, it's fun. He's doing a trick, but if you think about it, this is very disrespectful to the new. The people will be thinking back to times that he's reported on this tragedy and this other tragedy, and they'll be thinking, did he do that trick? They might have even uncovered video footage. They might have went back early, these ones. He fucking did one. Remember that family that got mowed down with the fucking bus, or like them that fell in front of that train? He did it then, look. And then they maybe went like that to him. David,
exposed.
Aye, David, simple as this. You either jump or we're going to push you. Right, you can leave your own accord or we're going to give you the bullet, mate. Now, I'm not saying that happened, right, but he'd been doing the news for years. And then suddenly I exposed that trick. But see that and like the DD thing?
Yeah.
See when you've no got a telly thing, or you've no got any stand-up, or you've no got any kind of YouTube to stick stuff onto. You've just got that shite in your fucking head that's gone nowhere. You're basically mental.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I felt, and I remember people, pals that I had, saying that I was mental. I remember the things I would come away with. I was at this party once, and I was saying something. I can't remember what it was. Now, it wasn't a complete incoherent mess, but I was saying something. Imagine this. Imagine if that happened, or it's kind of like this. And I remember seeing one pal say to another, he's mental. He's mental, him, right? And I kind of laughed, right? And then I walked away and I looked back and I saw that pal say to the other pal, no, I'm serious, by the way. And kind of tapping the head as if he really is mental. Yeah. You know, like that. Like, I'm not joking. He is mental. And I hadn't said anything like, I'm thinking of talking to myself, or not that that's mental, you know, his opinion, right? Or, and I wasn't saying anything like, you know, if you look at the Queen, sometimes you can see the kind of forked tongue. Yeah, you know, it was nothing mad, just sort of mad ideas that if you're fortunate enough to be in a position where you can write that stuff down and make a programme or write a book or just blog about it, this is pre-social media and all that.
Then you're praised and
aye.
Put on a pedestal.
Aye, look at that. Look, you're imaginative. Where do you get these mad ideas from? If you've not got that outlet, you're just a nutter or mental or a loony or something like that. But if you've actually got somewhere you can do it, you get a fucking career at it.
Yeah.
I got a career at it. Dee Dee comes entirely for that whole fucking...
Yeah.
Just getting ideas into your head and just thinking people are looking at you and
one of the most popular characters on the show and of the stuff you've done. So that must feel kind of rewarding or kind of validifying of things, you know,
it's cracking.
Fuck you. I'm not mental. Well, this is what's going on.
I am, but I can fucking benefit off it because I don't think a lot of other people, I'm sure there's a lot of other people who are like that, but I've not really come across a lot of people who would also then say back to me, this popped into my head or this mad thing popped into my head. I think certain people are kind of wired in a certain way that if they're lucky to get a career at it, if they know, they kind of go fucking mental. And I remember tweeting a while ago, like a few years ago, kind of I remind myself of that, what that feels like to have ideas or something and nothing to do with them, and how you feel that you're a freak, you feel that you're a weirdo and there's nothing you can do with you've not even got it in your head that one day you'll have a sketch show or that's what you even want or you think you can do it. You just think you're nothing and you think you're mad and you think sketch shows, telly things, books happens to other people. It doesn't happen to somebody like you. And it does, it can happen to you and you just fucking try it.
You've always been quite open on social media and in all sorts of places about discussing mental health and stuff like that. Is that kind of one of the motivations to kind of to let people know that as you said, things, this can be a good thing, this can be a positive thing, this can, good things can happen,
aye,
and so on and so forth. Almost to be, it sounds too much to say a role model or an example, but again, as you said, if you tell your story and say there was a point where you just thought all these ideas, or you know, one person at a party going, no, seriously, you know, that could eat away at you. But the fact is...
And you believe it and everything. Because it's not as if I went like, right, I'm going to turn my life around and use these ideas. It just all happened accidentally. Yeah, I could have been going to Lidl, and if I went to Lidl, I might have walked out and all. It doesn't matter if you're in fucking Lidl or whatever like that. If you're happy, whatever it is you're doing, you've got pals or whatever the situation is, you can still be fucking happy.
Yeah.
Because you'd think that, oh, all right, oh God, that's so close. I nearly ended up stacking shelves in Lidl. What a terrible life that would have been. Then I end up getting into the telly stuff, which is good and everything. But fucking twice or something during that whole time, I was really close to topping myself. And it doesn't necessarily mean once you get into some kind of fucking show busy thing, stand up or something like that, that's it. God, you must be so happy getting in front of people coming to see you.
Yep.
Just if you're wired in a certain way, you can have this destructive fucking way of thinking. I hope none of that sounds fucking patronising. Like,
no.
Oh, listen, see if you're in Lidl, you know, as long as you're happy. As long as you're happy there, you know, just, you know, having a bit of money and getting a book and telly stuff, you know, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be happy, pal.
It's interesting. When I had Billy Bragg on, he said one of the most challenging and damaging things can be getting everything you ever wanted and then realising you're still not happy. And again, he was saying he's lucky that he always wanted to be a musician. He got that. He's got to do that for his life, and it has made him happy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it can sound in some way patronising. But if you're working in Lidl, and you've got this dream of something else, but, you know, you're still happy, but you've at least you've got dreams. If you achieve them dreams and you're still unhappy, then you've got nothing to look above that. You're like, and there's also the guilt of, well, I shouldn't be sad because people have killed to have their own TV show or to have this. Aye. So that's, do you know what I mean? There's an added pressure there in a way.
I don't know how it all works. Was it getting into the whole fucking science? Because I don't really know what the science is. Fucking chemistry or neuroscience or something. But no matter what your situation, unless you're really kind of bad after, there's always something to fucking moan about.
Yeah.
Or there's something, I know that mental health isn't a day been moaning, but like look at like fucking Amy Winehouse or something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of world at her feet and like fucking respect for everybody, for your normal cunt who just likes her.
Yeah.
And then these musicians who really know their stuff in terms of music, and she's got it all.
Yeah,
kid, you got it all. That kind of thing, like Tony Bennett or whoever, it just isn't enough for her.
Yeah.
I know saying that's what she was thinking, because I don't know, I've seen Amy, you know, the film and everything. Yeah. You just some people, that could be what led them into getting into like stand-up or music or wanting to be a performer of some kind. It's maybe that's the thing that actually drives you, your kind of mental fucked upness or neediness or whatever
weirdly,
it is.
It's the thing that has set you apart or given you that drive and that push.
Like,
that
you could go to the I say the average cunt, right, but I mean by that I don't mean like just your average fucking normal cunt, but just that you could go to your average cunt and say, you must, I mean, would you like to one day be a stand-up or one day be like a fucking a rock star?
Yeah.
Or something like that, right? And they go, nah, that would be good, but nah, no really. And they've got everything, everybody's got their fucking problems and all that, but you know, you go on Facebook and if you've got like people you knew for when you were younger or whatever, you got them as Facebook friends and you kind of look through their pictures and they're there with their family, and I know everybody's got secrets and all that, right? Not everybody's just smiling, happy. They don't show on Facebook photos, here's me fucking greeting in the shower or anything like that, right? But they'll got families and happy, and as one lassie I knew from Millport, there's four wains and she's happy, she's bouncing about, bouncy castle and having a cracking time, and you don't know everything she's gone through and everything, but you're like, look at this fucking, I remember you back then, look at you now, happy and everything. Now, no, I don't look at her and go, God, if she doesn't know how happy she would be if she had a sketch show.
Yeah.
Or how happy she'd be if she did stand-up.
Yeah.
The person's got what they've got in their life, they've got their wains, or even if they've not got wains, or whatever the fuck it is. If they're content and they go, I've got everything.
Yeah.
I've got fucking everything. You know, that's kind of how I felt when I was on antidepressants.
Yeah.
But I was still making stuff up, like the vines and all that, and still wanting to make telly stuff up. But I was thinking, I've got fucking everything. I was in the shower. I remember being in the shower on the citalopram and just feeling happy. I'm like, this is fucking mad. I was always capable of feeling happy when something happy happened.
Yeah.
Like something funny happened, or good news, or about a sunny weather when you didn't think there was going to be. But I was actually waking up in the morning happy for the second to open my fucking eyes, feeling kind of like really grateful for everything I've got. And I was tweeting, oh God, I love my girlfriend and I love my son. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
What a fucking cunt. I don't go like that. I'm just so grateful I've got my son in my life and all that. I feel it. But back then, I mean, I really felt it.
Yeah.
I felt so grateful for everything. See, just walking down the street, just walking about and walking through the park, felt this happiness that I'd never felt before. And it wasn't this intense, icky fucking feeling. It was just this general, everything's all right. Everything's all right. I'm starting off all right. That's my base. That's my fucking foundation today. And, I feel all right.
And when you've had a lot of bad, then all right is really fucking great.
Every
all
day,
right is good.
Every day,
yeah.
Waiting up and going, I feel all right. I feel all right. Every single day, all right. And nothing really getting and tapping me. And that's not a big deal. That's all right. That's all right. Who cares? That's fine. everything's all right. And then it goes upwards with that, you know, feeling really, really good and everything. And can't remember what my fucking point was, but just kind of reminiscing of the happier days. And there's people, I'm sure there's people out there, because that's a citalopram, as in, I think it's SSRI or whatever, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor or something, which basically means the thing in your brain, one of the things in your brain that sort of makes you happy, instead it's sort of fading away like it's meant, it sort of keeps it kicking about between these receptor things. I don't know what the fuck it is, really, right? But basically, you don't just... that happiness thing doesn't sort of fade away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's cunts out there who have got this this naturally.
Completely naturally, yeah.
They've got their doons and everything. Yeah. But there must be people who are really lacking in serotonin, and there must be people who have got lots of it, or it hangs about for longer, like it was with me on that. And I'm like, they're out there. I'm like, wait a minute. Is that what you call it's like? Like this lassie I know who's kind of happy, and know that other one on Facebook, but is that, how many other people who are like this and they're like...
And they've always been like this.
I've always been like that. And going, is this what it feels like to be fucking normal? But you know there's tons of other people in antidepressants or knowing them, or miserable cunts, or violent people, angry people who don't feel that way.
Yeah.
But I'm like, there's people out there, you see them, walking down the street with a smile on their face. I get that and all, you know, walking down the street and thinking about something kind of funny. But I'm like, is this what it feels like to just to be like a normal person? So it's not really about achievements and or I nearly ended up in Lidl.
Yeah.
Or I managed to get into this other thing, then I get into fucking stand-up. I remember like getting ready, I was writing my stand-up show in 2007 and I was planning my fucking suicide. I thought, I can't do this, just telling my girlfriend, I'm thinking of doing this, and thinking of doing this at my show, and I'm not really sure, I'm not sure. I don't know what to do then. I don't know what to do. If you're wired that way, you'll get all panicky and anxiety, and you don't know how to calm yourself down, and it doesn't matter what anybody says, you catastrophize it, as they say, and you think, this is it. This is it.
Yeah.
And you're almost grateful. You're grateful, good. Good, this is it.
It's done with now.
Good, my life's ruined.
Yeah.
Good, finally. And it's a weight off your shoulders that your whole life's ruined. You've got it in your head. And I'm like saying to my girlfriend, Lynn, I'm just going to tell Tommy Shepherd, at the Stand, who's now SNP MP. I'm going to tell, he kind of gave us the stand-up thing at the Fringe.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell him I can't do it. I'm just going to tell him I can't do it. But people have bought tickets, Brian. I'm just going to tell him I cancel it. Give people the money back. Then my girlfriend said, then you'll be finished. Then you'll be finished comedy wise. You know, you wanted to get into this. You'll be finished. I'm like, I know, Lynn. I know I'll be finished. Well, good. Good then. Good. Yeah. And I was thinking, fucking going into the toilet and thinking, right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to break up with Lynn. And then I'm going to just get the kind of whatever money I've put into the mortgage or anything like that. I'm going to get the money. And then I'm going to leave. I'm going to go back to Australia that I went to when I was travelling. I'm going to enjoy my life for a wee while. And then when that money's run out, I'm going to hang myself with a fucking tree somewhere. Right? I'm going to fucking do that. And I remember nearly making the decision to cancel the fucking show.
Yeah.
In order to put set the wheels in motion, you know, set the ball in motion.
Yeah,
put
or set the wheels in motion. Yeah.
Set the wheels in motion, that's it. I remember, you know, ready to just kind of, I wanted to do something that would be no turning back.
Yeah.
And to do all that shit. So that was after I'd stopped drinking. I was going to top myself. That led to me stopping drinking. And then here it is again, having stopped drinking. And then later, years later, just before I went on antidepressants, I was ready for doing it again. So it's hard for me to go like that, or I could have ended up in Lidl. When, if I'd maybe ended up in fucking Lidl or something like that, a kind of job that isn't a really creative job or something, I could have been, this sounds really fucking, I don't know what you'd call it, entitled or privileged or fucking unaware of what I've got. But look, you're not going to just be like that. I'd kind of maybe nowhere in with somebody else and... Fuck, that sounds terrible. I could have been happy with somebody other than Lynn without my son being born. But you know what I mean? You just don't know how...
No, completely. You don't know what different... You don't know what has contributed to what. What of these good things have actually also been a huge amount of added pressure that you may not have been ready for or equipped for, that then have made you feel the lowest of lows, as well as the highest of highs along the way. I mean, just damn... Parenthood is an example of that. I'm not a parent, but I know people who've become parents who say it is the best thing in the world, but there are also points where they've just been petrified because it's a huge amount of pressure and a huge thing to deal with. And it gets overlooked because it's something that tons of people deal with. There's parents everywhere. There's families everywhere. But it's still one of them that...
It's my fucking duty.
You can't feel bad about the fact that that's a lot of pressure to add on and to have to deal with.
See,
right?
If you're somebody like me, I mean, it's my fucking duty to tell folk. And maybe this... I don't know what leads to postnatal depression, right? So I'm not going to... But I'll say this, even though I'm probably fucking wrong, right? Yeah. But I wonder if... I think postnatal depression is maybe a lot to do with hormones or something.
Yeah.
But I can imagine something that might lead to it is people saying, oh, it's such a wonderful time in your life. Oh, you're going to love it. You're going to love being a mother. And maybe it happens to dads. And it happened to me in a way. That's when, when my son was about two, that's when I was really fucking low.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I'm on the fucking spectrum or I've got some OCD or Asperger's-y thing or something like that. But I just couldn't shift my fucking head out of this way that I was before, no ada, all the time in the world, all the time in the world, and I can do all my After Effects tutorials and my Premiere tutorials and learn about making music, all the time in the world, and then suddenly you've not got one bit of free time.
Yeah.
And there's no way I could say to my girlfriend, I know you've been up since 5 a.m. and all that, but I'm going to do one of my wee tutorials that isn't actually leading anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I got to where I'm today, because I'm just fanning about in Photoshop, fanning about in Flash, fanning about in everything, just learning how to make things.
Because of that free time.
I just boredom and things like that. And then you get to a point where fortunately you can actually use that to make things that get you on the telly or whatever. So I was just sort of wanting to fanny a bit, but you can't. How the fuck can you, say, lie on the couch watching Columbo when it's a fucking baby?
Yeah.
Right? And any time, the 2 years I've tried to date together, and I couldn't, maybe it's fucking infantile for me to be so kind of, nobody would shift my mind out of it, being spoilt or something. Yeah. But I think I was just so used to it, I just couldn't snap my mind out of it. I wanted to get back into my things. Yeah, I wanted to do my stuff, even for fucking 2 years in. I wanted to do my tutorial things or go for walks or go to the pictures fuck about. And you kind of do it, And it's also things like, I've got this thing where I fucking hate being interrupted. If I start something, imagine I'm sitting down to do an After Effects tutorial or something like that.
Yeah.
Let's see, so it takes me a wee while, dead slow learner, it takes me a while to get into some kind of thing, thinking about it. So let's see, how does that work? Stop what you're doing, do this now.
Yeah.
I'm nearly finished this thing, just stop, or playing a game, stop.
Yeah.
But stop. It fucking feels like it hurts my fucking head.
Yeah.
And it took me fucking years to learn how to go, right, see before you start playing this game or doing this tutorial or something like that, this time doesn't exist.
Yeah.
This is like finding a tenner, right? This was never your tenner, right? Yep. See when somebody might come along at any second and say, excuse me, did you see a tenner that I dropped? You've got to give that back right away. It was never yours, so don't get all upset. It's kind of like that time-wise. See if you're sitting down to play this game, get it in your mind, this is a gift. This time, right, at any minute, this is going to get interrupted.
You've been listening to Scrooby's Picks Discretion Pieces.
There we go. What I mean, as you can hear, I'm just in awe of Mr. Limond. Great chat. We chat a load more as well. In the next half, we get, obviously we stop that kind of just as we're starting to kick off his career as such and his path to doing a Limmy show and things like that. I should mention at this point, he's taking Limmy live on the road. We talk about that more in the next episode, but he's in Salford on the 13th of September at the Lowry, and in London on the 16th of September at the Apollo. So check that out. Yeah, I'm going to keep this short and let you get on to part two. Although if you're listening early, part two isn't out till midday, so maybe I should ramble a bit and mention speechofrecords.com. Going on iTunes and rating and subscribing, going on Amazon and rating the book and giving us 5-star reviews and pushing it even higher in everyone's estimation. That's enough plugging, really. Let's just get on to the next episode. See you in a bit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.